Hi, I'm Skating PJ, and this is Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast, where we're going to get up close and personal with members of our skating family who have a connection to Ontario. So, let's talk about it. Hi, everybody. At Skating PJ here, and I'm even more excited than usual to present our next guest in the Let's Talk About It podcast series for Skate Ontario. I am talking about none other than Olympic bronze medalist, three-time world bronze medalist, and seven-time Canadian ice dance champion, Tracy Wilson. How are you?
I'm great, PJ. How are you?
I am fine. Of course, you're also a coaching legend, and we've got so much to talk about, so we're going to get right into it. I want to know why figure skating, and then specifically ice dance, of all the things you could be doing in British Columbia when you started.
Well, I think what hooked me was, first of all, I saw Barry and Louise Soper, Canadian champions, at the local Coquitlam ice show. And I just thought Louise looked like a princess. And to my seven-year-old brain, that was heaven. There she was out on the ice. I think I was a chipmunk at that point. And then I saw her and I said to my mom quite clearly, I want to be that, you know. So anyway, but figure skating, I think what drew me in and what has kept me involved so many years, it's just had such a tight grip on me. I think it's the, what makes it unique is it's the combination of sport and art. And so it truly, in my mind, is the original all-inclusive sport. It has something for everybody. You can find yourself in it. You can lose yourself in it. And initially, I liked the idea of being a princess, and I wanted to be a champion, and I was a jock. I wanted to jump. I wanted to race. I wanted to go fast, all of that. I had a nasty knee injury in my teens. And at that point, I was really struggling with the jumps because of my knee. And so my parents basically just said to me, skate because you love to skate. I mean, it was kind of obvious in the results. I wasn't going to be a champion. They said, it's great exercise. You've got wonderful friends. It's a lovely community. And they always believed that athletics and academics went hand in hand. So they wholeheartedly supported my skating. I had, you know, the only strings attached for them was I had to still love it and I had to keep improving. And so I kind of went about, and then PJ, a taller Cranston was in, you know, the height of his success. And I used to watch him and I used to want to be him. And I would take all his best moves and his music. And, you know, my mom would go to pick me up at the rink after work. And the other parents would say, has Tracy been watching Taller again? I think I did his broken leg spin better than he did. But, I mean, I would never say that, you know, public. Well, I guess I am saying it publicly.
You just did.
I just did. But I think that attempt at me being artistic, some of the coaches took note and found me a partner. And so I skated a couple of years. And then, as luck would have it, when I was 19, I met Rob. And then there you go.
So let's talk a little bit about your musicality. Where does that come from? I mean, the athleticism I get, you've got brothers. So, and you wanted to keep up with those brothers. Sure. From a couple of stories you've told me. But I want to talk about your musicality because it is second to none.
That's sweet. I've always loved music and loved dancing. I had a father who loved boxing, rugby, and the ballet. And so I was introduced to all of that. I mean, in the Summer Olympics, I'd watch the boxing with him. He was a rugby coach. I'd be on the pitch with him watching, you know, the head-to-head combat. And of course, and then the arts, opera, ballet, everything. So I don't know. I think it's kind of in you. I think there's so much that's in you. And I think that's what's so wonderful about the sport. As I said, you can actually find that in yourself. And I think as a coach, that's what I'll look for with my athletes. What is it that makes them tick? What is it that's going to get them hooked and run with that?
Now, does that come? You obviously teach athletes at the highest level. I mean, you know, I only have to think about Yuzuru Hanyu and Javier Fernandez sort of among them. And I know you've consulted on lots of other skaters, and you and Brian co-coach and co-team coach, I guess, at the Toronto Cricket Skating and Curling Club. But what about the student intrigues you? You must be like an amateur psychologist. Mm. Part of your job. Can you talk to me about that in terms of coaching?
Well, I think you watch the skaters, and in my years commentating, I used to watch, and I was just struck by their courage. What we do as figure skaters, it's, you know, you're out there, you're on your own. It's, I don't know. I just, I feel like over the years, because of my experience as a skater and my love for the sport, all you do is you just try to share that. That's what I try to do. Ultimately, the most important thing is that people come out of the sport stronger and better because of it, knowing more about themselves, knowing more about life skills, and not broken. For me, the skating, yeah, sure, it's really important, and we want to develop it, never at the expense of a person. And so I always look at that person. You know, this is the beginning of their lives. And, you know, if they learn how to take the ice with presence, if they can learn how to believe in themselves to find their gift, and that, you know, let that be enough, that's life. That's dealing with life, the ups and the downs. It's like, oh my God, I failed again. I failed my fourth figure test 7 times. I got so good at it that it's like, oh yeah. I mean, I cried when I passed. You know, the failing something wasn't a surprise. Literally, I sobbed when I passed. I didn't know what to do with myself. But I think, I mean, you know, PJ, you know, that's life. And you never want to be afraid of going after it because of the downside. So, you know, Brian and I joke, you just want to minimize the downside, and you take it and you learn from it. And, you know, we all know you learn so much more from the hard times. That's really where you get pushed to that next level, and then you can make friends with that level. And so that is what intrigues me. It's really being alongside. And you know what I found out? That I end up learning as much or more about myself, I feel, than I teach. So with some of these greats like a Yuzuru or a Javi, even Yuna, I'm learning as much as I'm teaching. And Jason has been, amazing. Well, I mean, that's a whole other level, my relationship with Jason and the work we've done. So, yeah, I feel very, very blessed.
We're talking about genius Jason Brown. I think we should put genius at the front of his name. That's all I'm going to say.
I'll never say that.
I will. I've said it to him before too. Listen, Tracy, I want to know, having been an elite athlete, an Olympic medalist, did that help you as a parent, or does being a parent help you as a coach, or is it a bit of both?
Interesting. I learned so much, and that with the help of Peter Jensen back, and he worked with Brian, Rob, and I, and Liz Manley. And we worked with him for 4 years going into the Calgary Olympics. And so we really started to understand how to train ourselves and prepare ourselves for that kind of crazy, unrelenting pressure. And then started to apply it to my life after sport. And I think what it taught me was that, no, I did not know it all, that this was just the beginning. And so with the kids, and as you're going through the, you know, trials and tribulations as a family and raising 3 kids, it just allows you, you understand how you can maybe access and dig deeper and grow out of the harder experiences. But it definitely shaped my life for how I look at it, and And it sort of becomes, you know, yeah, bring it. We're in it together. We're in it together. And oh wow, this is hard, but it's gonna get good. You know, you turn it around as opposed to, oh my God, what am I doing wrong? You know, that things are falling apart. It's like you work through and you get to those highs. And those highs are richer for what you go through.
You know, it's very interesting. You talk about Peter Jensen, a legendary sports psychologist in the Canadian sport field, but I'm sure lots of other places in the world as well. Were there any surprises? Like you must have thought, you know, I know myself pretty well. I'm an elite figure skater, you know, all that stuff. Were there any things that he brought up that you went, huh, I hadn't thought of things that way?
Oh, so many things. The first of all, my relationship with Rob, that was a really big one because, you know, PJ, I pride myself on doing it right. And I, you know, with the training and I studied Eat to Win, so I had the exact right nutrition and, you know, and technically and needing repetition and needing that, you know. And Rob comes in and he's this free spirit and, you know, he's having pancakes and syrup at McDonald's for breakfast before he trained, and he's having a good time. And he's a genius. Rob was an incredible genius. But what Peter helped us to, as opposed to me looking at Rob and going, oh my God, you are wrong. You're not an athlete. And he was looking at me going, oh my God, you are so boring. You know, we had to sort of help each other. So he brought life to what I did, and I brought some structure. But we would look at the strengths, right? So that lesson helped me in everything. It helped me, of course, in my marriage and my relationship with my husband, and in my partnership with Brian and with the other coaches, in the television booth. You know, we all have our unique gifts and we have our strengths and weaknesses, and we can choose to look at those things that annoy us, and try and fix a person. That's hopeless. Or you can just, you know what, you bring out the best in each other. So that I think was one of the pivotal lessons. And, you know, the other one was learning to work with my breath, and slowing down my heart and just understanding how to manage your emotions when they, I knew for me, PJ, stepping on the ice at a Canadian Olympics. And having, you know, the announcer say Tracy Wilson, Rob McCall, Canada, that moment would make me want to cry. And so I had to really prepare for that moment and get out on the ice and be noticing it all, because you can't kind of go, I can't hear you. You know, you're all part and being okay with it. And that's a practice of breathing. And but there's so much wonderful stuff out there, and wonderful teachers out there. So yeah, it's kind of taken off now, but then it was all new.
When you and I've had lots of conversations over the years, of course, and I remember you telling me once about the pressure that came with, you know, going to fill up your car and in the gas station, they were saying, go for the gold, you know, going to the grocery store, picking up your lettuce, same thing. Can you talk to me a little bit about that situation? What was that like?
Well, for me, I mean, it's the sort of thing, be careful what you wish for, because there was nothing I wanted more than to be in that position of representing my country, and to have this chance to skate in an Olympics and ice dance and be a medal favorite. So you've got that on the one hand. On the other hand, you can't get away from it. And it's like you don't exist as a person anymore. And so that, so you, everything feels weird. You can't find your natural vibe, right? Like, you know, sometimes I'll say that to my skaters, look, just find your groove and feel your love. Like you got to get over the whole, you know, the whole thing. But yeah, it would be going to the gas station and be like, hey, Tracy, you're going to bring us the gold? And it's like, oh my God, you know, and you know, we'd get the box of telegrams from everybody in Port Moody signed one big long telegram wishing me good luck, like it was everywhere. But you know, I really I was with my husband before the Olympics. We were married and we were very much involved. He was a rugby player. And so the rugby players just treated you like you were, you know. So I had some normalcy at the rugby pitch. I really hung on to that. But But no, it's not easy, and you have to work at sort of finding it. And I think about what it was like for me, which was that much compared to Brian Orser, who was the gold medal favorite. But I think what you have to, you can look at the two sides and you can go, oh my goodness, does it even matter who I am? It's just all about this pressure. Or you can look at it like, what a wonderful gift I've been given. What an opportunity. This is something I've dreamed about. And, you know, you pick what are you going to hang on to. And so when the pressure comes in, you have to notice it and let it go and really look at the other truth, which is what a privilege. And I'm so grateful.
You were in Sarajevo for your first Olympic Games, 1984. And I think you placed, let's say, eighth.
Did yes. You? Gosh, yeah, good.
And then bronze medalist at the 1988 home games in Calgary, Alberta. When you go to the first Olympic Games, everybody that I've ever spoken with has said that they had no idea what that actually would mean. Were you the same, or did you feel like this is just another competition?
Oh, no, it was the most incredible thing. And I think we weren't medal favorites. So we were relatively, unknown. We obviously, you do get a lot of media at the Olympics. So that was strange. But the experience, it was amazing. And it was probably the last of the smaller Olympics in Sarajevo. So the whole Canadian team was in one sort of apartment tower, and we had the Med Sci committee, and everybody, the skiers, the skaters, and so we became very close, the Canadian team. And, you know, Todd Brooker came out and Steve Podborski, they were not snowed out, but I don't know what happens, but their skiing was canceled. So they're out watching compulsory dances. And, you know, we're out at the hockey games and skiing and everything. So it was a wonderful experience. But one of my all-time favorite experiences was standing in the tunnel waiting to go into the opening ceremony. And as we're standing in the tunnel and walking in, all of the Canadians, we started stamping our feet and screaming. Like, collectively, we were a bunch of excited kids. And then we walked into the stadium and they announced our name in Canada. And it really, what an incredible moment.
Does it feel different wearing the maple leaf at the Olympic Games versus at a World Championships?
No, it does. It does, because you're part of a bigger community. So yes, I'd have to say yes on that. But we had we just had such great camaraderie in both the Olympic and in the figure skating. It's just a privilege in both.
Walking in the opening ceremony in Calgary, what do you remember from that?
Noise, color, excitement. And I was really mindful of using that even as a practice with my emotions, because the whole thing is, when you look at everybody celebrating, you want to be with them and you have a job to do. So it was a matter of, at that point, I was observing and thoroughly enjoying it, but not getting caught up in the exuberance in the way I did in Sarajevo. And it sounds like it's not it's just wonderful in its own way. But yeah, I think you see all of the flags and the red and white in the fans, and it's a marvel.
Tracy, I was talking to Brian, and he said that one of the things that he believes he offers your students is the fact that he actually has been there. He's actually walked the walk of the Olympic Games. How important do you think that that is for your students, for you to be able to say, I've been where you are?
Oh, it's invaluable. You know, you bring whatever experience you have. You bring whatever, and coaches can have experience in different ways. And his definitely, like, I noticed with Brian the first time I stood at the board, because I wanted to shrink, you know, there you are. And he's like, oh my God, this is wild, at the boards with him. And he's like, it's showtime. Like, he has this wonderful energy and vibe at the boards. And it's like, go, go, go. So I just love that about him. It's good for me. I feed right off it, and his confidence and his love of being out there and competing. Yeah, it's definitely a gift he has, and he understands the whole thing. He's obviously had, you know, with Sarajevo, where he was second, as well as Calgary, he's experienced it. And from a number, different perspectives, because 4 years at that age is a lot, and new, yep, new and veteran. And so he gets it all. So no, it's great. And I'll call Brian at competitions, always asking him how he sees something, and really share information with him.
You know, it's wonderful to have friendships that go so far back. And I find lots of us in figure skating are lucky that way.
Yes. We've got
friendships that predate puberty.
Yeah. Yes, it's the truth.
Honest to goodness. Tracy, I want to sort of flip the conversation to commentary, because what you bring to commentary is a very different set of skills. Do you ever have your coaching hat on when you're watching a program and having to do commentary, or are you in a very different place in your head?
There's the analytical side is the same as coaching. Because, you know, with the commentary, my number one thing is share the love of the sport. Don't get in the way of the performances, because anything you do with the commentary needs to enhance what the skaters are doing. Either it could be in a celebratory way, it could be in explaining, helping to understand, whatever. So yeah, I would kind of go in knowing you want people to understand the sport, but only in a way that helped them enjoy it.
Okay.
Right? Because there's only so much. Me saying left shoulder, technically the odd time is helpful, but to a lot of people it's kind of bigger picture. And then if I was going to teach, I'd teach over the replays, because there's no music, there's no performance. So that's where, I mean, I'm kind of going way into detail here with it. But, you know, I think so much is just you sort of share your love and help people to understand. But so analytically the same, probably, as a coach.
What do you love about figure skating that you want the audience to know?
I think the courage that it takes to do it. And it's really embracing the sport and the art and the uniqueness of that. And I think when you watch something that's truly beautiful, you're taken out of your head. You're not in that thinking. You're in the feeling. And so I say it's like out of your head and into your heart. You get completely sort of one with it, and you connect at a different level. And that's what those are the programs that you never forget. The ones that you're not thinking, you're just feeling. It's pure enjoyment. That's what I love. That's what I'm looking for. When you can get that technical side, the sports side, and you can connect that with the music and the storytelling, it's just incredible.
Do you think, so lots of fans say all the time that ice dance is their favorite figure skating discipline at the Olympics. It's the one that they wait for. It's the one that they want to watch. Why is that? How would you define ice dance to somebody who didn't know what it was?
It makes you feel.
Okay.
And you can appreciate when something looks easy and effortless. You may not pick up the nuances and the hidden difficulties, and that may not matter. But what you don't have are the disappointments are hidden. You know, you can see a twizzle when it goes awry, but for most part, and that's sort of that one thing. But this, the performance is still there. The, you know, musicality is still there. It's not all lost. When a skater in singles, it's less forgiving, much less forgiving. When a skater in singles is not on, it can go sideways, and an audience feels that. And you know, maybe that makes it tough. Yeah, but you say that seems to be a fan thing, but I think there's such a value too in all of the disciplines, and finding a way to combine the jumps and the sport on the artistic side of single skating. I think they're working on that, and I think that has some room to grow.
When you were a kid, you mentioned Toller stealing his moves, stealing his music, wanting to be artistic in his way. Were there any other sort of influences, anybody else that you were a huge fan of when you were a much younger skater?
Well, Karen Magnuson.
Of course.
You know, when I started. So it was kind of the people around me when I was young, and Toller Cranston. So Karen Magnuson, and of course the, you know, Janet Lynn and Dorothy Hamill. I loved Moiseeva and Minnikov and Linichuk and Karponisov, of course. So Robin Cousins, there were so many. I was really a fan, but typically they were the ones that made you feel, as well as combining excellent technique with that kind of other magic.
Was there ever a moment, because of injury or because of anything, that you said to yourself, I don't know if I can do this any longer?
A number of times.
Okay. What influenced you to stay? What made you stay?
First of all, I love the sport. And I mean, you know, I almost quit before Rob. And then, you know, Rob was looking for a partner, and I was the last person standing, and I skated. But there were a number of times with him, I really doubted it, that I had it in me. But that perseverance, I kept going. It happened to me as a commentator, and it's happened to me as a coach. And I think you sort of go through those. If you are gonna push yourself out of your comfort zone, you're gonna have those moments where, you know, you really sit back. And I mean, Brian and I talk about it, and we talk about it with some of our skaters. You know, that the nights when you cry yourself to sleep and you do your soul searching, especially as a skater, not so much, but and you have those moments, and all of our athletes do. All of the top ones do. I remember Evgenia Medvedeva. I was doing a competition with her in Russia. And this was after, so when she was younger, you know, I think things came easily. And then, as you know, when a skater matures and grows, it's much more difficult. And she said to me, you know, I find I'm getting nervous. And I said to her, oh my gosh, everybody does. Like, have you seen Yuzu? Like, but it's, you know, you get comfortable being uncomfortable. And with that, and it's a process. It is a process, and guaranteed, if you stay with it and you can push yourself through it, hold your hand through it, and you break out of it. It's like, and you come out that much stronger. And it's happened to me time and time again, that you just trust it and stay with it, and know that digging deep is going to get you great things.
Tracy, standing on the podium, accepting an Olympic bronze medal, in that moment, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking this is something tangible I can share with those people who helped me get here. Because I had this wonderful moment on Olympic ice with Rob and the audience when the free dance ended, and it was one of those where you're just eternally grateful. And then they cleared things up, and then the podium came out, and we went out there, and at that point it was, this is for them. You know, the Norma Koepke in the skating club office at Capilano Winter Club, who was always there to help me out when my mom was working, and endless, the number of people and volunteers and coaches, and I knew at that point that I wanted to give back.
You know, I was thinking about something that you just said, which was about sort of finding your resolve, I guess, and pushing through. If we have a young skater who's listening to this podcast and they're kind of doubtful about whether they should continue in whatever they're doing, whether it's figure skating or something else, give me a piece of advice just before we sign off.
If you have a love for what you do, first of all, never leave it on a low, ever. When you're on a low, that's the sign that you just hang in and you keep pushing yourselves, because nothing you do is for naught. Hard work is never in vain. And you get to be my age and you look back at these experiences and how they built you, you know, and things, whether you decide you're going to be the world's top chef, or you're going to be a doctor, or whether you're going to, but the experiences that you've had, those experiences will come in anything you do in your life. And I was fortunate when I was training, I got taken on by IBM to be a motivational speaker. And I spoke to a lot of people who had just come out of university, and we kind of talked about the things we were facing. Anyways, at the end of the day, I saw my skating and my sport. It's like a university degree or an education. You just can't beat that kind of experience. So whatever it is, don't look at the problems. Look at what you want and look at where you want to go. The world will tell you why you can't do something. Your only job is to look at how you can do it.
Tracy Wilson, that is the best advice to end on. My dog thought so too. That was what the park was
like. No, your dog was saying, Tracy, that's enough.
Hardly. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I know you've got a super busy schedule. Hope to run into you around the boards one of these times soon. And thank you again, Tracy Wilson.
Thank you, PJ.
Bye for now.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast. Don't forget to follow us on social media. I'm at Skating PJ. Until next time. Bye for now.